say that right now.
What about Jim Waters?
Of course. He should be. Mm. Yeah.
Let me just two things very quickly. One is we didn't touch on your own move to Pittsburgh, University, and how and why that came about. Can you?
Yes, it came about because I had an offer of a job as a dean of science and mathematics at the University of Kentucky, and it was a definite offer. They said they would like to have some letters of reference in their file, just pro forma. Could I arrange that? So I did, and one of the people I asked people at Mellon Institute to write for me, and then I thought, well, they don't know anything about my teaching, but I had been teaching a course at Pitt for many years. So I went to Ed Wallace, who was the chairman of the Pitt Chem Department, asked if he'd write such a letter. And just like that, he said, well, if you're talking about going out of town, can we talk with you? They had a written agreement, an informal agreement in the various places in the city here that they wouldn't rob one another. But if I was talking about going out of town, then he felt that was off. So in 2 days, he and the dean whomped up an offer that was better than the Kentucky offer, and I didn't have to move either our home or my lab. Mellon was very good. They let me continue, keep my group going there and keep the lab there while I was building the new one at Pitt. So that's simple as it happened. It turned out this was about 2 years after the merger between Tech and Mellon, and it was a good thing in hindsight too, because as I said, that was way overstaffed. There wouldn't have been enough students to go around, and so I benefited from cutting loose from that thing at the same time. But I can't overemphasize how good Mellon was to me. They gave me space there for about a year, and they gave me a little budget so that I could get services like glass blowing and drafting and that kind of thing done. It was very nice. So it was a very happy arrangement. And I got to Pitt at a very good time. They were getting a new building, and they've been on the incline very rapidly.
Yes. Could you regulate the teaching at Pitt in some way? I mean, that is...
No.
Did you have a regular teaching role?
Yeah, I had a regular role. I told them when I went that I'd like to be a regular professor. And in fact, when we applied for a grant, somebody at the granting agency said, now, do you plan to set up your own institute or department? I said, no, I want to work within the framework of a chemistry department. My feeling was, let somebody else do the administrative work. Mm-hmm. And I just stay with research and teaching. I love to teach. I'm enough of a ham, so I'm not like that.
You ran up on the formal retirement age from the university, did you or not?
Right, yes.
So when you became emeritus, did you continue going, or I mean, what?
I didn't teach anymore of that. I guess one short 1 month course, but I didn't teach any more of that. It cost me about $60,000 to retire when I did. I retired at 65. The next year, they put in an early retirement incentive program, and which you'd get your half your salary. I've forgotten the arrangements now, but it would have come to $60,000. But I had such a good time the year I retired that I don't regret it. I went to Nigeria. I went to, had a trek in Nepal. My sons took me on a canoe trip up in northern Minnesota and Ontario, and something else happened. So it was fine.
And did you keep up a lab presence?
I didn't keep a lab. I kept an office up until about 2 years ago. The department was very good in that. And I kept telling them that whenever we'd get a new chairman, I'd go to him and say, now you can have this anytime you need it. Just I would like about 2 weeks notice so I can clear out. And then they finally called me on it. But I feel very fortunate. I got treated very well. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do any teaching, and I didn't do any lab work.
Mm-hmm. When you look at your own contributions to the field, What words would you use to describe it?
Not very important. I think the...
Use some other words.
I think the research will be forgotten. And that the main thing, and I think this is true of most graduate research, the main thing is training students. And I've been fortunate in having some very nice students and some good ones. And I think that's the main part. I doubt if any of my... Well, some of the papers I've had lots of reprints from, but nothing was earth-shaking at all.
Where have your students gone? In industry or academia?
Mostly in industry. A few in academia, but not too many. One went to Brooklyn Poly and then to the University of Alabama. But places like... I had several of them at what used to be the Bureau of Mines here, Pittsburgh Energy Tech Center, and one at Mobile. One went with what used to be National Lead, NL Industries now, and one with Alcoa, and a couple of them have died. It's amazing. A couple have retired. But I've felt very, very pleased with almost all of them.
I think people in the field admire you as a critiquer of instrumentation and somebody with suggestions and thoughts about its improvement and use. Very reliable information source in the territories. Would you self-describe in those ways?
Would I describe myself?
Yes.
Only modestly. I'm not really an instrument man. I use instruments, and it was the science that I was most interested in. I know Beckman has a letter in its files about how I complained about their gear train on their instrument. After all these years of building gears, couldn't they do a better job? And one time early on, I made a detailed comparison between a Perkin-Elmer and a Beckman and a Baird instrument. It really was straight from the shoulder. It didn't pull any punches. But I don't think I'm regarded as an instrument person at all. I was just lucky that we had those two new instruments at Mellon, and Mellon became a great, almost a pilgrimage place for people that wanted to see the instruments before they bought one, and they wanted an independent place. They didn't want to just depend on going to the company. So we had lots and lots of visitors come through that look at them.
Last question: Where does stamp collecting come into all of this?
Didn't come until I retired, about a year before I retired, and so it's been a hobby since then. Keeps me off the streets. I have a number of hobbies, but that's getting more important. I love to travel, but I can't travel much anymore. My eyesight isn't very good. Among other things.
When did the book that you co-published is a very extensive and ambitious formulation, and certainly in the class by itself. Where did the idea for that come from? And the energy for it.
My and the what?
The energy.
The energy. My co-author is in Switzerland. And the Swiss Chemical Society came to him and asked him if he would be interested in writing a book of this sort. He had written another rather similar type book on symmetry in chemistry. It was nice illustrations intended to be a lighter treatment. And he said he'd be interested in doing it, but he didn't want to do it by himself. If he could get somebody to join him, then he would consider it. So he wrote me. I knew him briefly from our sabbatical years ago, but I didn't know he was a stamp collector then, and I certainly wasn't one. And But since then, we have written, we had written a couple of joint papers on stamp collecting and chemistry. So he wrote and said, would you care to join me? And I wrote back and said, yes, providing it's in English. I can't write German. And he said, of course it would be in English. So that's the way we got started. And it was just a lot of fun. That's where I got the energy to do it. All of the stamps pictured in those books, except one item, belonged to one or the other of us. But neither of us, you had email, and so we read each other's material and criticized it, both positively and negatively. So we each have a stack of correspondence that's thicker than the book.
How long did that take?
About 2.5 years. We started essentially from scratch. And we divided up the subjects, and Edgar wrote on some, and I wrote on the other, and then, as I said, changed the thing. But when you read the articles and the chapters, you can sense very quickly which person wrote it. Mm-hmm. We have different styles. He was a wonderful person to work with, great sense of humor and a lot of knowledge.
Did you travel to and fro at all, or did you?
Just once. Near the end, I went over there for a week and met the editor and worked with Edgar, settling a lot of little last-minute details. And that's the only time we talked.
What feedbacks has the book caused?
Well, we've had a number of reviews, which have been, on the whole, pretty good. I've been pleased by that. I would say my main disappointment is the price on it. I know it has to be expensive, but I think it's a shame.
Do you know how well it's sold? Do you have any
I don't really. There were 1,000 copies published. If you look in yours, you'll see in one of the first few pages a block that has a number in it. And I've seen numbers up around 700 or 800, but there may be big blocks under that haven't been sold. So I really don't know. I've gotten only one royalty check, and that's quite a while ago.
Well, it was enlightened of the publishers to do it, because it's obviously not the sort of book that a publisher makes money on.
Yeah, that's right. I agree. I think this was the editor's, his name is Kisakorik, a Turkish name, and he has a PhD in organic chemistry from one of the Swiss schools. And I agree with you. I think it was nice to take on. What did I read recently that they have published? Oh, that play that Hoffman and Gerasi wrote. That was also published by the Swiss Chemical Society.
Yes, yeah.
So they do this kind of thing.
Yes, which is very nice. Uh-huh. Yes, yes. Are you still actively collecting?
Yes, oh yes. I'm editor of this. I don't know.
So
one thing I do each year, I write an article with a fellow from England on stamps for the year related to chemistry and physics. So I keep collecting.
I was going to say, do you have any criteria beyond saying chemistry and physics? Is it chemistry and physics?
And physics. Mm-hmm.
And do you have more explicit criteria in that, or is
No. In fact, even they're pretty loose. I'll take mathematicians and some, certainly biochemists, but medical people. You often get these, you have to buy a set to get a single stamp, and so there'll be a set on Nobel Prize winners, and some of them are biochemists or MDs or something of that sort. So it's a very loose definition.
So how long have you been doing this?
I started about 1980.
And you have, you also have a collection of foil on foil.
Yeah.
This is a subset.
That's a subset, yes. I have another subset on Bell and the Telephone, and another one on research universities, and another one on minerals. These are just not complete by any means, but I got quite a few stamps.
Is that how is your collection organized? Is it by country?
By country.
By country.
Yeah, it's a working collection, Arnold, and I just have it in plain old Mellon Institute three-ring binders, rather than buying albums, because it's specialized, and you can quickly put more money in albums than you do in your stamps. So I want to keep that to a minimum. And I say it's a working collection because I'm always pulling stamps out, using them in a paper, and then I put them back. I've just written a paper on Nobel Prizes. You know, this is the centennial year of them. And so I have a lot of interesting things about family relatives and how people heard about they got the news of the Nobel Prize. And what they did with the money and some things like that that are not widely known.
Yeah. Are you publishing that in the magazine?
No.
Yes. What is the...
You would interested in, you think, for...
Oh, yes. Yes, we'd be interested. It would make an interesting subject, I think.
I'll send a copy to your editor.
Frances Collar, yes.
Yeah. Is she still the editor?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I'll send
yes.
it to her.
Yes. What is the circulation of...
Of that? About 250. Mm-hmm. We have about 200 paying members, and then we send to some libraries and Library of Congress, for example.
Mainly in the United States?
No, worldwide.
But our most.
We have 2/3 of the members are in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. We should give a little publicity to the existence, if you would like.
That would be very nice.
But, if you look in the most recent Chemical Heritage, you'll see the ACS History Division has got a little piece in there, you know,
oh.
saying we exist.
Yeah. So, yeah.
No, we'd be glad to do that.
All right.
If
you'd be very nice.
Supplies sometimes. Well, I guess reluctantly stop.
That took a lot longer than I thought, and I'm afraid it's just a lot of hot air.
I'll delete that one from the table.